So it gives me very great pleasure to welcome Professor Rahel Yegi from Humboldt University, and she's going to talk to us about transforming solidarities. We're very glad that she can at least be here with us virtually. We would have loved her to be here with us physically as well, maybe another time. So over to you, Rahel. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Sorry. Okay, can you hear me? And can you see me?
Yes, we can hear and see you.
Okay, wonderful. So thank you so much for this invitation, Ray and Paula, who has organized this event. I'm really, really sorry that I can't be with you in person. We have gotten used to Zoom meetings, but it's still always a bit awkward, I think, to only see each other via a screen. But nevertheless, I'm very happy that at least this opens up the possibility to discuss with you, which is very much a work in progress. I have written an earlier paper on solidarity practically decades ago, and have engaged in the topic recently in the context not only of some of the obvious problems that we face with respect to solidarity, for example, within the EU, also the problems that we face with respect to what I call the emergence of regressive solidarities, but also within a research project that I'm part of, and that is actually interested in figuring out how solidarities on the one hand transform the world, on the other hand are being transformed as a reaction to how the preconditions for solidarities have changed. So let me start, and I'm not sure whether you can see the PowerPoint presentation as well as me. I don't know what would be less awkward, just to see someone talking to his computer for 45 minutes, or at least to have some pictures. So I decided to have a PowerPoint presentation at hand in order to present what I have to say. So once again, thank you very much for the invitation. I will start with a remark by a German journalist that struck me as very fitting to at least part of what I have to say and what I think needs to be said with respect to solidarity. Manfred Detling says, "One thing will remain from socialism. It has sharpened our awareness that solidarity is more than a moral sentiment." One could add, we should also sharpen our awareness that solidarity is more than community, and we should also sharpen our awareness to the fact that solidarity is more than the kind of things that in the public discourse is sometimes paid lip service to. So solidarity, here you have an old picture. I mean, the classical example and phenomenon of solidarity, namely solidarity within a labor struggle. And while I will argue that, of course, solidarities have changed, the preconditions for solidarity have changed, this model, solidarity as a certain kind of practice that at the same time relies on a common lot, a common fate, certain preconditions that will inform my approach to solidarity. So what am I going to do? I'm going to identify three central problems. Then I'm trying to demarcate the concept of solidarity. And finally, I will discuss three characteristic tensions within the phenomena and the concept of solidarity. But let me start first with some general remarks. The COVID pandemic has made the topic of solidarity omnipresent in our contemporary public discourse. The last 18 months saw politicians praise the solidarity of citizens And together with citizens, they have applauded the ceaseless work of nurses, care personnel, and doctors. Staying at home and getting vaccinated have been promoted not just as precautionary acts regarding one's own health, but as instances of responsibility, compassion, and solidarity. Yet in the same time span, material change has not been forthcoming. The working conditions in neoliberalized hospitals have not improved. The refugee camps in Moria and elsewhere have not been shut down. The pandemic thus exacerbating existing crises and inequalities. The very vaccines that Western governments advertise as solidaristic acts are kept under close guarded patents and stockpiled with horrendous effects on the vaccine rates in most African countries. On a smaller level, we can see how solidarity has functioned only within social classes and not between them, as many people were willing to go shopping for their neighbors, but far less were concerned for those who don't have a home to stay at home in, and city governments such as Berlin's did not hesitate to evict the homeless from their temporary housings and camps. So solidarity, despite being often evoked and appealed to, has not reached very far, not transformed very much yet. Moreover, the concept itself is incredibly vague in its use. This does not just hold for our everyday use of the term, but also for the role it plays within social philosophy. While other concepts such as justice have been mapped out over and over again, the concept of solidarity is underdetermined and under-theorized, even if things with respect to the discussion on solidarities are changing and are about to change. This is unfortunate, as not only do we need to know what we are talking about when we appeal to solidarity, we also need to understand the concept in order to defend it against ideological misuses. More specifically, there are three problems we have to solve with respect to solidarity and its potential societal function. The first is the problem of the infrastructures of solidarity. Quite often we see appeals to solidarity whilst at the same time what I call infrastructures of and for solidarity are neglected. Just think of all the appeals to citizen values while at the same time the basis for living together is undermined by gentrification, segregation, the commodification of health systems, and so on. I argue that what we are seeing in such cases is an ideological use of the notion of solidarity. Second, the attempt to distinguish pseudo-solidarities or parasitic solidarities, as Sally Schultz calls them, or as I would suggest, regressive solidarities from real solidarity. Is such a distinction even possible? I mean, with respect to new populist and authoritarian movements, we have seen a lot of what I would call regressive solidarities, people evoking some sense of belongings and some sense of community while playing it out against the stranger and against others. So the kind of exclusive solidarity and the kind of regressive evocation of those common bonds that, and this is my question, does the very concept of solidarity understood in the right way provide us with means to criticize and even identify those regressive and pseudo-solidarities? Finally, what is the difference? And here I come back to the citation. What is the difference, if there is one at all, between solidarity and some unspecific humanitarianism? The cases in which solidarity is evoked by pointing to something as unspecific as the vulnerability of us as human beings and so on. So this again is a tendency that I want to argue against and set my own concept of solidarity against. Now, these are difficult and multi-layered problems. The ideological uses and misuses of the term point to deeper and fundamental tensions within the various phenomena related to solidarity, as well as the concept itself. So what then is solidarity? What do we even mean when we refer to an action or a situation with the word solidarity? How are we to conceptualize solidarity? Is it a given social bond or a result of a common struggle? Is it joint action or a state of being together, a relation? Is it universal or related to a particularistic sense of belonging? And finally, is it necessarily temporary, as in a strike that eventually comes to an end, or an ongoing commitment? Maybe solidarity is not one thing that can be captured in a universal definition once and for all. As Nietzsche famously said, only that which has no history can be defined right away. Now, solidarity is definitely a concept with a strong and interesting history. It is a concept that inherits the idea of fraternity from the French Revolution. It is a concept that has its origins in the French movement of solidarisme, and at the same time, it provides a new vocabulary to socialist and working class movements. It is a concept that is not only evoked to describe and create social bonds within a given society, but also to go beyond a given group or state and establish relations on a global scale. And it is also a concept that underlies welfare state arrangements and is thus embodied in current social structures, but also used to criticize the limits of these arrangements. This history has shaped its meaning, and social and historical events and dynamics have been sedimented in the concept. Moreover, it is one of those interesting concepts that itself, as a concept, has played a role within history. It has had a mobilizing effect and shaped the self-understandings of social actors and movements. Thus, it is a concept that not only has its own history, but has itself shaped the course of history. But precisely due to this being such a powerful and effective concept, it is a concept that is contested and incredibly blurred in its boundaries. And even if it's true that interesting concepts are always blurred boundaries, it is worth to work out its core meanings and attempt to get an understanding of the semantics of the concept through a historically informed reconstruction. I will here start this reconstruction from our everyday use of the concept. So the structure of the paper, in the first part, I'm going to do exactly this. I'm going to analyze the concept and the phenomenon of solidarity by going back to our everyday understandings of solidarity and pointing out the differences between solidarity and attitudes that might be neighboring concepts or might be in one family with the concept of solidarity, but nevertheless, it makes sense to spell out the differences in order to get to the core of what solidarity is. In the second part, then, I'm going to discuss the three tensions that I have mentioned in the beginning. So what is solidarity? An attempt to demarcate the concept of solidarity. As a first tentative approach, it might be best for us to start with some basic references regarding the concept of solidarity and its history. Corresponding to its etymological origins in the Latin solidus, meaning solid, tight, dense, whole, or united, the notion of solidarity evokes the idea of a certain kind of connectedness. The historical evolution of the term from the juridical idea of joint liability, the liability of every single debtor for the entire debt in a shared enterprise, is still present in the idea of standing in for each other. As Amengual puts it, that everyone has to stand in for the others and that these have to stand in for every single one is the basic content of solidarity. The usage of the concept in social theory can be traced to these origins. Linked to the broad problem of social integration, solidarity refers to the social bond that holds society together. As the sociologist Emil Durkheim explains in The Division of Labor, I quote, solidarity is what prevents the breakdown of society. What quickly becomes obvious when considering these general references is the dual character of the term. On the one side, solidarity has a descriptive meaning. It refers to a state of affairs within a group of people or society that is characterized by mutual attachment, connection, or simply objectively given dependency. On the other hand, solidarity is a disposition to act in a solidaristic way. As such, it has a normative meaning. When we appeal to solidarity, we expect a certain behavior and a certain attitude from each other, Further, we think of this as something we owe to each other, something we should do and expect each other to do, at least within particular relations and in specific situations. But what exactly is it then that we expect when we ask for solidarity? And what kind of connectedness or relatedness is it that provides the basic for the specific sort of standing in for each other? A first approach to answering these questions might be gained by comparing solidarity to other kinds of social relations. By distinguishing solidarity from neighboring concepts, we can tighten our grasp of what is specific of it about solidarity. Like friendship, solidarity seems to be based on a feeling of affective attachment as well as some sort of connection. Yet friendship is a stronger emotional bond relying on unconditional feelings and resemblances of the heart as expressed in the romantic concept of friendship. Furthermore, it is directed as someone specific and necessarily restricted to a limited number of people. Thus, friendship is a face-to-face relation, whereas we can form solidaristic bonds with people distant to us, both in an emotional and a physical sense. In short, we cannot be friends with strangers. If we were to become their friend, we would cease to be a stranger, but we can stand in solidarity with strangers. Here it might help to think of solidarity as it evolves in solidarity campaigns. The desire to express one's solidarity with political or social movements in foreign countries has nothing to do with knowing the people involved personally, nor even necessarily with knowing some of them. Instead, solidarity is mediated through a common cause, or what we think of as a common cause. We are solidaristic with a group of people or a political movement because it stands for something we ourselves identify with. Perhaps they are fighting for something that we ourselves consider worth achieving. Perhaps, as we often suspect, we simply have the same enemy. However, the notion of identification here points to an important feature and another distinction, solidarity as against coalition. Although solidarity may be based on common interests, a common fate and certain interdependencies, such as the common interest of workers during a strike, solidarity seems to express a deeper commitment than is necessary for a coalition, which is only formed to achieve a certain and shared goal. And whereas a coalition might be ended or even betrayed, if a better route towards the goal opens up, one does not simply disavow one's solidaristic commitments once a certain constellations of interests has altered. This leads to a general point. Many of the attitudes that we consider solidaristic don't seem to be directed to the realization of simple self-interest. Relations of solidarity seem to transcend a narrow conception of individual interests, at least to such an extent that we can even think of them as characterized by a willingness to make sacrifices. But there's one more thing that comes to mind. Whereas a coalition is normatively neutral, there are good as well as evil coalitions. It all depends on the case that they strive for. Solidarity seems to be good in its own right. Being solidaristic is the right thing to do. It is normatively desirable as a relation itself, so it seems. Solidarity then is a normatively imbued concept, as is justice or love. A coalition, so to say, is instrumental for achieving something. Solidarity is part of what should be achieved. But this question, of course, if solidarity is normatively independent or dependent, will be a matter of dispute, and I'm going to get back to this. Next alternative, solidarity as against alliances. It appears to be more difficult then to distinguish solidarity from the often evoked idea of an alliance. Yet there do seem to be differences. Whereas alliances are temporary and might be limited to a specific issue or even a single issue, solidarity suggests a broader, more comprehensive and longer lasting commitment. Yet this does not mean that an alliance collapses into a coalition. There are many groups such as Black Lives Matters that use the concept of alliances with their own good reasons, and prefer this concept to that of solidarity. The good reasons have a lot to do with differences, internal differences, and the question of how to transcend those differences. As the engagement in a coalition is, as we saw, based on self-interest in the way that need not be the case in alliance. So the distinction between alliance and coalition, according to me here, is that alliances might be temporary, might be a single issue, and might be not as long living as solidarity, but it is not, as is the case in coalitions, based on self-interest. So next alternative is something that comes very close to each other, and a lot of authors would even have a tendency to identify solidarity with loyalty, I would say. The idea of a comprehensive and long-lasting commitment suggests an affinity between solidarity and loyalty. But although both seem to be based on the identification with a common cause, a nation, an institution, or an idea, there are also significant differences between them. This seems obvious when considering a mafia clan. It would sound peculiar for any clan to demand solidarity instead of the loyalty usually associated with the mafia. The loyalty demanded and sometimes enforced in this context, the mafia context, requires unconditional dedication. Solidarity, on the other hand, seems to be related to a sense of legitimacy, which doesn't mean that it is legitimate in all those cases, but it is related to a sense of legitimacy. It often evolves out of the sense that a certain claim, for example, of the workers' movement is justified. It often disappears once we lose our confidence in its justification. So while solidarity might be unconditional in terms of commitment to the cause, it is still mediated through an evaluation of the means, the movement, and even the conceptualization of the cause in question. Furthermore, while loyalty is always particularistic, it would make little sense to speak of international loyalty. It remains to be seen, and is one of the questions I will discuss below, whether entire solidarity can be seen as a universalistic attitude. Finally, solidarity and compassion. Having distinguished solidarity from friendship, loyalty, and forms of coalitions, we should also tell apart solidarity from the less particular disposition of being ready to help based on compassion. Confusing these attitudes, as is the tendency in current discussion sometimes, means to ignore important connotations of the concept. Being moved by the suffering of others and even engaging in charity are not to be identified with acting out of solidarity. I quote, "We don't need your compassion, we want your solidarity." "We don't need compassion, we want your solidarity," is a well-known slogan used by refugee activists. Even if compassion is not the opposite of solidarity, and even if altruistic conduct and helpfulness may be part of a solidaristic practice, this slogan draws a sharp line between those two dispositions for a good reason. It is a claim to be treated as equals, to be met at eye level. Solidarity then is a practice in which we don't act for, but with someone. Solidarity then is opposed to compassion in two significant aspects. First, solidarity, relying on inclusion, demands the realization of a certain kind of connection or connectedness that relates one situation to the situation of others. Pity or compassion for the other, in contrast, mark a distance. They do not relate the others to one's own situation, except in the very vague sense of being a vulnerable human being oneself. This then also leads to the second aspect, as compassion signifies an asymmetrical relation, whereas solidarity is a symmetrical one. Finally, and the last point, solidarity as against care. The symmetrical character of solidarity also distinguishes solidarity from care. I might care for those I'm solidaristic with, but I'm not necessarily solidaristic with those who I care for. I care for my infant, but would it not be odd to claim that I feed my baby out of solidarity? I can care not only for fellow human beings, but also for animals and nature. At the same time, it seems odd to consider myself as being solidaristic with nature. If solidarity means to stand in for each other, the other must be able to stand in for themselves first. After all, what common cause could I have with the tree? Even if I care about the tree, and even if the well-being of the tree certainly can affect my own well-being. Thus, even if solidarity means to realize dependencies, it is not the general and not the asymmetrical kind of dependency we are used to picturing upon encountering the world. This also brings us back to one of the invocations of solidarity mentioned in the introduction. To go shopping for one's neighbors during the lockdown is the right thing to do and should go without saying. It is an act of immediate care and readiness to help in order to fulfill the other's needs. Yet it is also an example of what we should not term solidaristic if we don't want to have an all too vague and deflationary use of the term. We are now able to come up with the first working definition of solidarity. Solidarity means standing in for each other based on a symmetrical, reciprocal, and cooperative relation mediated through a common cause. So now in the second part of my paper, I'm going to discuss the three problems or three tensions within solidarity I mentioned. The first tension is the one between symmetry and asymmetry that I've evoked. The second one is the universalism as against particularism of solidarity. And finally, I'm going to discuss the precarious basis of solidarity. This is Moria that I've mentioned in the beginning. And as you will see, the question of how to and what it means to be solidaristic with refugee will play an important role in my discussion now. So the first problem is the problem of symmetry and asymmetry. To conceptualize solidarity as symmetrical and reciprocal, as I did, in my first attempt to come closer and to approach the concept, seems apt in many of the core cases and examples for solidarity, such as a strike movement during a labor struggle. Here, solidarity clearly means to stand by each other, to give each other mutual support in a joint activity. In this context, solidarity is indeed a symmetrical and reciprocal relation. However, in some of the cases mentioned, symmetry is less obvious. And the refugee solidarity is one of those cases, maybe. Is not solidarity with refugees or even with social movements in the global south in some sense structurally one-sided? Think of refugees in danger of drowning, making their way through borders, living in camps under unspeakable conditions. How could a solidaristic movement here in the privileged parts of the world claim to share the same fate? And how could it possibly act in symmetrical terms? We don't stand in for each other here. We should stand in for them. Isn't it obvious that it's not mutual but one-sided support that is appropriate? That is the appropriate response here. At least it is obvious that the engagement offered will not be met by any immediate payback or return in reciprocal terms. In other words, does emphasizing the symmetrical and reciprocal character of solidarity underestimate its altruistic dimension? It seems then that we must face up to the apparent fact that solidarity sometimes includes as asymmetric aspects, at least for the time being. The solution, I suggest, for this problem finds its clue in my last phrase, asymmetric at least for the time being. This is an asymmetry, as I will argue, only for the time being, and as I want to argue, only upon first glance, because it hints at a deeper structure necessary. Deeper structure necessary for my understanding of solidarity and my proposed solution. To make sense of this asymmetry for the time being, and as I will coin later on, and enlarged reciprocity, let's return to the statement cited above. We don't need your compassion, we want your solidarity. My first encounter with the slogan was when it was used by refugees themselves, so in a context in which the slogan clearly stated a demand. However, this does not just mean we want you to take action. It means fight with us, not for us. Do not treat us as recipients of charity, but respect us as comrades situated on an equal level to be met and engaged with on eye level. The important factor then is that solidaristic practices are collective practices and practices that create collectivity. They create a connection, whereas pity, which often hides behind the mask of altruism, marks and establishes distance and even worse, paternalistic superiority. This is exactly what Syrian Cater and others argue against when criticizing missionary feminism in the context of the feminist discussion. But there is more to be said about this. In this case, asking for solidarity implies the reflexive task to understand how the so-called refugee crisis is our crisis. A crisis of Western capitalism and imperialism and its contradictions are ours as well. Slogans such as "we are here because you were there" do not just refer to the slogans again used by refugee activists and refugees themselves, "we are here because you were there," do not just refer to the Western countries' responsibility, but go further and point towards a close interdependency between we and you, as well as here and there. What in ahistorical media portrayals is presented as the crisis of singular failed states is revealed as a crisis of the historical foundations of our Western political and social institutions. As such, it is a crisis that has the potential to put our well-established assumptions and institutions about the nature of sovereignty and the demos, for example, to a test. The argument then goes like this. Even if there is an immediate necessity to help the groups you are solidaristic with, a necessity that leads to an asymmetric readiness to help on first sight, the supposed asymmetry is only superficial. There is an underlying connectedness to one's own situation. That is, this help arises not simply out of some vague universal humanism, but is related to a common fate. Refugees in this sense are a symbol for and a symptom of a troubled world order that we are, and admittedly privileged, of course, part of, and won't be able to deal with unless we include the refugees' struggles and demands. So on a related matter, if in order to criticize the paternalism of, I quote, missionary feminism, some authors suggest to the Western bystanders that they should fight their own fights, this is understandable, but as such not always an adequate solution. Rather, the challenge here would be to overcome the inbuilt asymmetry by locating one's fight in the fights of the others and to connect them with all the difficulties, of course. But then in order to get past political slogans, we need to confront the deeper underlying issue here and to explore the solidaristic relation in more detail. If you want to hold on to the symmetrical character of solidaristic relations in the cases I've discussed above, what appears to be obvious is that the reciprocity of solidaristic relations cannot be a simple exchange relation. It is not some kind of tit for tat that is at work here, but as I recall it, an enlarged reciprocity. Solidarity then stems from the fact that we are affected by the same situation, even if we're located at different positions with regards to the situation. Phrased positively, the reason for solidarity is the belief that the success and well-being of others is important to ensure the flourishing of project with which myself identify. Note that this is an identification with the fate of others that is not or not only motivated by a sense of an all-compassing common humanity, nor by a mere recognition of the suffering of others. Although it should be mentioned that there is nothing wrong with the recognition of others' humanity and suffering, of course. I just want to hold on to the more specific idea behind solidarity and not to get out of touch with this particular and specific meaning. Note as well that this is an identification of fate, not just of interest, of fate, not just of interest, meaning that the reflexive recognition of a shared struggle that is at stake here precludes the reduction of solidarity back to that of a coalition. The most challenging feature of solidarity, then, is that in a certain way, it seems to transcend the opposition between altruistic and egoistic motivations. That is to say, despite its reciprocity, the motivation for solidarity cannot be reduced to the enlightened self-interest of rationally calculating individuals. Solidarity's reciprocity is not the reciprocity of an insurance model. Seeing one's own fate in the fate of the other not simply refers to the possibility that one is or could be confronted with the same situation as the other. It rather means that the other's fate affects me in a significant way. That is, it is mediated by our concern for and our being in a shared and interdependent world. How then can we understand solidarity as a relation that is neither to be equaled with asymmetrical attitudes, nor with well-calculated self-interest that leads to the formation of coalitions and pressure groups? Solidarity, so it turns out, is based on a non-instrumental understanding of cooperation that contrasts sharply with the instrumental concept of cooperation we find in most cases of coalitions or the mere commonality of interest. The very idea of solidarity then leads to an atomist understanding of the social that Charles Taylor argues for when he famously says that, I quote, what man derives from society is not aid in realizing his good, but the very possibility of being an agent seeking this good, that good. Embedded in a certain culture, acting within an already present structure of social cooperation, it would be mistaken to see them as using these relations in order to promote their own good. Rather, it is only on the very background conditions that provide them with the possibility to even articulate their own good. As Marx famously wrote in his introduction to the Critique of Political Economy, this is still in German. Der Mensch ist, men are a zoon politikon, not just a social animal, but an animal that can only individualize within a society in a given context. I should note that I'm not defending, at least not at this point, a holistic conception as such, although in general, I would be willing to go for a modest version of social holism. Here, however, I only look at it the other way around and take the fact that solidarity is realized in structures of social cooperation as a hint that those ontologies might have a point. We can now make sense of my idea of an enlarged reciprocity as it is based in the underlying idea of social connectedness and dependency as far as we are dependent on each other and willingly or unwillingly share a common form of life. This should be understood at least in the modest sense that we are involved, at least at some level, in the same practices and institutions. And again, we should note that this is willingly or unwillingly, that this is sometimes only behind our backs, and last but not least, that this shared involvement is shared by actors who are located in different social locations and takes place within structures of domination. Which is to say, by referring to a common form of life, I'm not assuming that we voluntarily form some kind of community, nor am I assuming that this is marked by some kind of equality. Instead, what I have in mind is what Léon Bourgeois calls the fact of being associated. We are associated by a whole network of interdependencies, whether we want it or not. So if you are already sharing a common form of life, then solidarity can be seen as the attempt to design and shape this form of life and to solve and fight against the contradictions and crises that evolve within it. The focus here is on the transformative or emancipatory aspect of solidarity. The fact that solidarity is neither egoistic nor altruistic, then, is a consequence of the already social constitution of the self and its interests. Being solidaristic can then be understood as an expression of one's own identity as it is related to others and dependent on social practices, institutions, as well as communal life, without trying to locate it in some kind of a pre-given community. Now, the enlarged character of the reciprocity in question also points towards the character of the association in question. While in a labor dispute as a prototype of solidarity, the Sorry, here I have a problem. Well, in the labor dispute, the reciprocity goes without saying. As I said, the reciprocity here is something that is mediated through the common world, or the shape of the common world that we are interested in. So, second problem, universalism versus particularism. The problem, the tension that I'm going to discuss here is the following. Is solidarity necessarily particularistic, or is it closer to a universal condition? After all, I said earlier that it makes little sense to talk about international loyalty whilst calls for international solidarity seem both sensible and appropriate at times. But then Richard Rorty has famously and convincingly argued that humanity would be too broad a concept under which to unite in solidarity. Rather, I'm solidaristic with my fellow workers, my gender, my fellow citizens, because we share a fate, a project, or a destiny. And sharing a fate has been something that I pointed to as well. This cannot be universal per se. It even seems to be particularistic by principle. It seems to refer to a specific and particular identity with specific features and even a history. Compared to this, mankind as such would be too unspecific as a basis for solidarity. Accordingly, quite some authors assume that solidarity is based on a shared sense of belonging, a particular situation and perspective, or some kind of pre-given and partial commonality, or even based on having a common enemy. Thus, asking for the normative dimension of solidarity, it seems to be limited to a particular position. Solidaristic duties, then, it seems, only go so far. We would then understand the ethical duty to act out of solidarity, a set of obligations towards a specific group, as a duty that is opposed to moral duties that we are supposed to have towards all human beings. In forming solidaristic associations, so it seems, we owe something to each other. Yet it also appears to be the case that the obligations arising from our solidaristic associations are hypothetical, fully dependent on us being involved in such a solidaristic relation and the preservation of said association. The question then arises whether we are obliged to form solidaristic obligations in the first place. Stefan Gosupat, for example, suggested a kind of moral division of labor here. There are moral duties towards all human beings, duties of justice, and ethical duties, duties of solidarity towards specific relations, groups, and projects. I'm not convinced by this strategy, though, which of course has to do with disagreements on a basic theoretical level that I fear I won't be able to spell out here. Again, I won't make the general argument here with respect to hypothetical as against categorical norms, but address the issue from within, from the standpoint of my account of solidarity that I take as a social fact. If solidaristic duties are hypothetical, is there any way in which we can be obliged to enter these relations at all? And once part of solidaristic association, how, if at all, could we be obliged to include certain groups or individuals into the we of solidaristic bounds? As you will see, I'm going to argue that a certain language of duty here is misleading. My solution to the problem exposed will be, again, be of the have your cake and eat it, the both ways kinds that connects the particular and the universal in a productive manner. According to my view, solidarity indeed starts from a particular perspective and context, but it doesn't have to end in the particular. It has a tendency, an inbuilt tendency to universalize. And there are good and compelling reasons to not letting it end in the particular, which is to say that the universalizing tendency has a normative grammar. At the same time, we will see that the language of moral duties in a strict and limited sense is not appropriate or not enough to express this normative dimension. Even so, if we have solidaristic duties only with regard to those with whom we share something specific or with whom we are bound up in some sort of cooperation, it can easily be argued that we are connected in a significant way to more people than a first glance might lead us to suspect. The quest for a new cosmopolitan solidarity thus arises out of the growing interdependencies in a globalized capitalist world, and with regard to the post-colonial situation, out of realizing the interdependencies we might not have been aware of thus far. My thesis here will be that the we of solidarity is not necessarily fixed. Instead, it is open and expandable with respect to the different contexts of dependency and cooperation that individuals are involved in. Moreover, there are good reasons to extend the limits of a particularistic perspective. The capacity to form solidaristic association, then, is related to the capacity to act within these different and changing contexts. Solidarity then means relating consciously to the situation and conditions in which one finds oneself. This is different because more specific from the idea of a solidarity with all mankind on the basis of our common humanity, but neither is it limited to the particular situation it has started with. With respect to the tension between universalism and particularism, I then arrive at a thesis that needs to be pursued also with empirical means. Solidarity is neither universalistic in the categorical sense, nor can it be particularistic out of principle. A solidaristic practice paves the way for what we might label a bottom-up universalism, an emergent universalism that is the result of a common practice and shared dependencies. This bottom-up universalism successively expands the horizon instead of imagining a view from nowhere from which our views could follow. In her novel, None to Accompany Me, Nadine Gordimer characterizes the motivation of one of her protagonists, a white South African, for working in solidarity campaigns as following. I quote, "Vera read newspapers and reports. She did come to know. She went to work at the foundation, not out of the white guilt people talked about, but out of a need to take up, to balance on her own feet the time and place to which by birth she understood she had no choice but to belong." Important in our context here is the relation that is being made here between self-understanding and the effort to relate to others, the social conditions and circumstances she's confronted with. Solidarity for Gordimer's activists seems to mean relating consciously to the situation and conditions in which she finds herself, to which she belongs, which also implies a better understanding of herself. In the end, realizing those dependencies enhances her own capacities to act in an autonomous and independent way. If solidarity is related to the notoriously contested ideas of duties to self, then in the framework of solidarity, it turns out that duties to oneself and duties towards others are intertwined in an interesting way. Thus, solidarity points to the ability not only to relate actively and positively to the social bonds and interdependencies in which the individual is, as a matter of fact, always already involved, but also to the ability to shape those very bonds and interdependencies. Thus, to make a long story short, to be solidaristic can turn out to be a matter of collective and individual autonomy as well. Getting back to the division of moral labor idea, it might then turn out that the conceptual framework of duty is out of place here indeed. Yet this does not mean that there is no normative dimension, no mistake committed when failing to act on solidarity. Solidarity, or even when failing, neglecting the connectedness to a certain situation and group. Solidarity, as in the case of the interconnected fate of, let's say, the Syrian refugee and the Western citizen, arises out of a correct understanding of the social situation one finds oneself in. The normative failure committed when refusing to engage in solidarity is then also always a failure of self-understanding and of not being able to relate to those conditions who are part of makes up our life. Solidarity then is not the other of justice, as Habermas has put it, but it is another way to even look at problems of justice, grounding them in the intersection of the empirical and the moral. It is solidarity, then, the basic fact of social cooperation that gives us reasons to engage in justice, not the other way around. Which as a result means to take solidarity not as a dependent feature, but as an independent foundational concept in its own right. I'm now coming to my last point, and also with a view to the end. So the last tension I want to discuss with you is what I call the precarious basis of solidarity and the question of whether solidarity is given or made. And spoiler, the answer again is have your cake and eat it. My claim is solidarity is both given and made, constructed, but at the same time to be found in some kind of precondition. Seen in this slide, to develop solidarity means realizing a context of dependencies in the double sense of recognizing and actualizing. We are always already in the social world, as I've argued, and always part of a net of social interdependencies. Thus, our own situation is voluntarily and involuntarily connected to the situation of others, and we need to recognize these interdependencies as well as actualize them into solidaristic associations through solidaristic acts. Once again, I quote, an understanding that one is associated is an associated being, one acts in solidarity. But then, even if solidarity is based on the fact of being associated, its emergence always seems to be precarious and to some kind contingent. The fact of being associated, the fact of interdependencies, does not automatically lead to solidarity. Problems such as mass unemployment, as well as the general neoliberal attacks on the welfare state, existed for many years before movements in France finally thematized it. French and German workers during World War I would have had good reasons to promote working class solidarity instead of fighting each other on the battlefield. One of the first great defeats, actually, of the idea of an international solidarity that this idea had to suffer. It took a long time before the women's liberation movement could raise the collective consciousness of women as suffering the same destiny, a process still going on in various kinds of minorities. At any given time, there seem to be many more good reasons for solidarity than actual outcomes of solidaristic action. In this regard, there would seem to be no fixed or certain foundation for solidarity, be it the cultural or historical origins of an individual or a group, their social, geographical, or organizational proximity, or even their objectively shared interests. The fact of being associated then does not seem to be simply that, a fact. Thus, even the statement, we are all in the same boat, is a matter of interpretation. It is a contested and interpreted and a fact that is subject to interpretation. This is partly the case because we are never associated in just one respect. We are at the center of various relations, which link us to a nation, a class, to gender, a sexual orientation, or to various forms of life. And it's not at all clear out of which of these commonalities a basis for solidarity will emerge. That is to say, there is no hidden essence of collective identity out of which solidarity will automatically arise. But at the same time, it doesn't emerge out of nowhere. So even if it is true that solidarity has no fixed foundation, solidarity in this regard is neither given nor invented. You might get your own situation wrong in rejecting certain solidarities. Acting out of solidarity might imply realizing interdependencies between one's own circumstances and those of others that one can deny only for the price of powerlessness with regard to these circumstances. The very fact that the we of solidaristic action is not simply given, but has to be constituted, then leads to potential for enlargement and for extending solidaristic relations that I've discussed above. Mediated via a sense of cooperation or common goals, the very process of solidarization sometimes provides the possibility for an inclusion of others. This has some consequences for yet another question. The fact of being associated, which might even exist behind the individual's back, has to be, I mentioned in passing, has to be actualized, realized, or even articulated as a willingness to identify with a certain situation, a common lot, and to act out of solidarity. I'm playing here with the Hegelian idea of realization or actualization that works with the double sense of becoming aware of and giving reality to something. And with the idea of articulation promoted by Herder, in which articulation gives shape to something that had existed in an indeterminate way before. So the idea that it is neither given nor made heavily relies on this idea of actualization or articulization. That means there is something, there is some kind of a common lot, but you need to articulate it in order to make it real. So the idea that, let's say with the Marxism, there is a failure to create class consciousness, the way that would be conceptualized here is somehow wrong because of this need for an articulation that has always a contingent dimension as well. Does then solidarity presuppose or create the common ground? Again, both. According to the view I've defended here, the we of the solidaristic group must first constitute itself in order to be. Solidarity then only actualizes itself as a common praxis, and it is this praxis in which the ability to stand in for each other emerges. The German sociologist Stefan Lessenich emphasizes this as the performative character of solidarity, and as I've argued, it doesn't make sense to create too strong an alternative between this performative character and the idea that there is a basis, a social basis, background condition, a condition of cooperation that acts as the basis for solidarity, even if the basis for solidarity then emerges while it is practiced. Which finally leads me to explaining the title of my talk. Transforming solidarities evokes a dual meaning. I'm coming to an end. Solidarities as we know them are being transformed. The very possibility of being solidaristic and to act in solidarity changes under changing social conditions. Secondly, solidarities themselves are part of the transformation of the social world. They have a transformative power, the power to transform practices, structures, and institutions. So when people talk about the decline of solidarity or about reasons for the emergence of regressive solidarity, what is very often put forward as a candidate answer is the increasing diversity of backgrounds. However, as I would argue, if I had yet another hour, it is not diversity per se, but the erosion, destruction, or decline of the social infrastructure that deprives us of the resources for solidarity. Individualization, spatial, social segregation, and so on, just to name a few. We thus need to concern us with the infrastructures of solidarity, which then would, to make a long story short, would provide a basis for creating emancipatory instead of regressive solidarities. Thank you so much. So.